Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I'm Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing good. I got my detective hat on. We're going to solve this mystery.
We are going to solve this mystery. You need to have like a little the little glass thing you hold in your hand.
A magnifying glass?
Magnifying glass. Thank you. You know, okay. That thing. You need one of those and a hat.
Yep, that's it. I will be the Simpsons Sherlock.
Well, I think that's Sideshow Mel, technically. Hey guys, we are brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. You can support us by going to patreon.com/TheSimpsonsShow. For only $2 a month, you can gain access to all of our bonus content, including a weekly, during the summer, weekly retro reviews of King of the Hill, plus weekly articles, monthly bonus episodes. We have a commentary track for the Simpsons movie on there. We have tons of stuff. I definitely encourage you to go check it out. We have a couple people to thank, Matthew.
We do. Wonderful people that give us money.
They are wonderful people. First of all, Robert Greenberg. Thank you very much, Robert.
Thank you, Robert.
Great name. Critical Flaw, whatever that is. Thank you very much.
Indeed. We both have many critical flaws, so you'll fit right in.
I don't know about critical. You'd think that
I don't know. I've rolled so many ones.
No, I guess that's true. I can't. I guess the ones have they have popped up. They've caused problems. On to this week's episode. It is the first episode of season 7. We're here, Matt.
Ooh, season 7. We're cranking through them. We're almost to the last good ones. What?
No, you're 100% correct. It is the first episode of season 7. It is Who Shot Mr. Burns Part 2. See, episode 2F20 originally aired September 17th, 1995, written by Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein, directed by Wes Archer. Let's see, 12.3 million viewing households and a 12.9 Nielsen rating, finished 16th in the ratings. 16th. Very, very good.
Yeah.
Finishing first in its time slot and the highest rated show on Fox that week, it moved the Fox network up from 4th to 3rd.
Because it's just that dang powerful.
I mean, it was a super hyped up episode. Everyone was wondering who shot Mr. Burns. They needed to see the answer to that mystery. I mean, it could have been anybody.
Could have been anybody.
Anybody. The chalkboard gag is, I will not complain about the solution when I hear it. That's really good.
That was a great one.
That's really good. The couch gag is mugshots. The family has mugshots with the theme from Dragnet. Again, they really like the theme from Dragnet.
Well, it's a pretty awesome theme.
It's a pretty good. It is a pretty good theme. Episode guest stars Tito Puente again. Continuing on from part one. The episode begins with us looking in on Waylon Smithers, seeing what he's up to. He is bedraggled. He's wearing like torn up clothing. He has stubble. He hasn't shaved.
He got like a 9 o'clock stubble.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. He's feels like he was swallowed. What he says, feels like I swallowed an ashtray and then coughs up cigarettes.
Indeed. Twice.
Yes, twice. We also see him having a dream that Mr. Burns is in the shower and that everything is A-okay. In fact, that they are investigators on a race circuit, a speedway squad. That'd be a good show.
It would be a good show. It's a very 70s kind of show, though. It's true.
You might as well have. Why isn't there a speedway squad, Matt? I'm asking you why. Tell me.
I'm assuming it's because there's not a lot of detective needs on a racing circuit. I can't imagine they would really need that much of a police force besides escorting out drunken people.
Well, yeah, you're right. and Smithers, like, is in a nightmare. He has lost his job. Mr. Burns has been shot, and he doesn't know what's happening. He has no memory of the night before. And we kind of get a news bulletin from Kent Brockman that kind of remind us of what had happened in part one.
Dozens of people are gunned down each day in Springfield, but until now, none of them was important. I'm Kent Brockman. At 3 p.m. Friday, local autocrat C. Montgomery Burns was shot following a tense confrontation at Town Hall. Burns was rushed to a nearby hospital where he was pronounced dead. He was then transferred to a better hospital where doctors upgraded his condition to alive.
You know those good hospitals, the ones that can tell if people are alive or dead.
Well, it's Springfield, so I can imagine there are quite a few more of the bad hospitals.
How many hospitals are in Springfield? Two?
I would assume, yeah, that there's one good, one bad. It's like Denny's. Let's not go to that one. Let's go to the good Denny's.
The good Denny's? That makes, don't go to murder Denny's. Go to the good Denny's.
Exactly. Or the health code violation Denny's.
Yeah. Don't go to rat Denny's. Rat poop Denny's is the bad Denny's. We don't want to go there. We only go there when unless absolutely necessary. Right. These only two witnesses we learn, it is Maggie and Santa's little helper, neither of which are helping.
That's true. Maggie makes her little sucky suck notion, and that's all she's giving him. I think that's baby for I Want My Lawyer.
If only we had, well, I can't remember his name.
Who are you trying to think of?
Homer's brother, half-brother.
Herb.
Herb! If only we had a Herb's little baby machine, be able to get Maggie's perspective on this. We see the family at the table. Lisa explaining everyone has a motive. Bart, Homer, even if I think my only complaint about this episode is that there are multiple flashbacks to part one, which I understand why they did it, because obviously you want to make sure people remember what happened in part one without having to go back and rewatch it, especially in the age of, you know, not everyone had, you know, instant on demand episodes. So
that's true. A lot of people may have seen it a long time ago and they didn't tape it because they were crazy.
Well, I mean, videotapes cost money, man.
That's true.
I don't
sort of hard drive, just not as much.
I mean, for the amount of data density on a hard drive, they're actually quite cheap compared to VHS tapes.
It's true, but they still cost money if you're archiving, you know, hundreds of television shows and movies. It adds up, you know.
Not everyone has your particular set of problems, Matt. And everyone quickly agrees it was Smithers. Even Grandpa, who calls him Smingers.
Smingers did.
Smingers
and
did
he goes
it.
To the outhouse.
And he goes to the outhouse, which is actually Homer's tool shed, apparently. Smithers does remember shooting someone in a drunken haze. Like, he's trying to recall. And I really do. I like the change in perspectives in this episode. Like, we are constantly going back and forth among the whole town, honestly. You know, we go to the Simpsons family. We go to Smithers. We go to Chief Wiggum as he's trying to solve the mystery. And, you know, it makes the episode gives it that feel of the mystery. It, you know, the constantly changing perspectives. We don't have a reliable narrator. You know, everyone has their own perspective and they're generally wrong. They're all clueless in different ways. Smithers remembers shooting someone, thinks it's Mr. Burns. I mean, he's the one that's been shot, so it makes sense that it would be Mr. Burns. Along the way, we see that Mo and the other hotheads are tearing down the sunblocking machine. You see, does it say that it crushes Shelbyville, Matt?
Indeed. There's a point, and I missed this the first several times I actually watched this episode way back when. There's actually a scene where they go up to the top of Mount Springfield or wherever the sunblocking machine is, and they pull it down, and I think Barney's in a truck or some sort. I think it might even be his Mr. Plow, and he like pulls it and it falls over, and somebody asks, which town did we just crush? And Skinner says Shelbyville, and everyone cheers.
Okay, I must have missed it. Smithers goes to a church to confess, a Catholic church, even though he is not Catholic. He did attempt.
Although he tried to march in the parade.
He did try and march in a parade, which is another hint at his sexuality, I suppose. He goes in confessional and does confess, but Wiggum is just hanging out in the confessional booth.
That's true. That's his main place for getting tips. That's how he finds the bad guys.
That's not cool, Chief Wiggum. I'm not particularly a religious man, but you probably shouldn't, you know, disgrace some religion's rights like that. That's bad. You shouldn't do that. Smithers, we get a little recap, basically, of his disagreement with Burns from part one. We also get a glimpse at Dr. Colossus.
One of the best bad guys in all of The Simpsons.
Don't see a lot of him later on, Matt.
No, but, you know, he's no shy Sideshow Bob, but he's still pretty awesome. I wish they'd bring him back.
Oh, that's...
I want to see him get in a fight with Hank Scorpio.
I think that he's no Sideshow Bob. That's an understatement, I think, about Dr. Yeah. Colossus. Do you know what the tail hook thing is? Madonna tail hook?
No clue. I was going to ask you. I didn't get the joke back then, and I still don't.
Let's see if the internet can tell us. Tailhook Scandal was a series of incidents where more than 100 U.S. Navy and United States Marine Corps aviation officers were alleged to have sexually assaulted 83 women and 7 men. Ugh. Ooh, that's awful. That's terrible. What is this? I don't want to know any more about this. All right, we're gonna move on from that. That's awful. But he mentions there's some joke about Madonna in that. I don't know what. I still understand. Like now that I know what that is, I still don't get it.
Yeah, she found out she missed that, so I don't understand why.
I don't get it. He's being interviewed by Kent Brockman. In this particular scene. And Krusty and Sideshow Mel are watching the broadcast, and Sideshow Mel recognizes the joke that Smithers mentions. Well, Krusty says that he stole it from him, but Krusty himself stole it from Pardon My Zinger, a show that actually Smithers does mention in part one that always airs at 3 o'clock on Friday, and he never misses it, and therefore he must have gotten the joke from that show, must have watched it, and must have been busy when Mr. Burns was shot, which would give him an alibi.
Indeed, and make it so he could not possibly have shot Mr. Burns.
So Mel with Krusty go down to the police station.
I am Melvin Van Horn, and this is my associate, Herschel Krustofsky.
Hey, hey!
Officers, you have arrested an innocent man.
Really?
Mr. Burns was shot Friday at 3 p.m., very time that Smithers was at home watching Pardon My Zinger. So you see, he couldn't have done it.
Yes, you're right. I remember now. I watched that entire show. In fact, I left the town meeting early so I could get home in time.
I gotta run or I'll miss the opening rank out. I would get out of my brake.
Slow down. Sidewalk's for regular walking, not for fancy walking.
Out of my way. I'm in a hurry.
You simmer down, I'll let you go.
So, instead of wounding an evil old man, I may have killed an innocent old man.
They use Jasper a lot in this episode.
A lot. I mean, they use him for this one thing.
No, he's in the fugitive thing when in the third act as well. He's the one. He's driving a car. He's the one who pushes the police wagon.
Oh, that's true. That's true. But that's so tiny. They just needed a random person. I guess they were like, well, the animators already drew Jasper once. Let's make it easy on him.
Is that the reason? Sure. So Sideshow Mel, he does have a particularly like a Sherlock Holmesian kind of moment here. I love that he for one finally gets the spotlight for just a moment in this moment. And Krusty is very subdued. Hey, I'm a sidekick. So Smithers remembers shooting Jasper instead of Mr. Burns. But why hasn't Jasper reported an injury? Why isn't he come in saying, I've been shot? You would think it would have happened. So they go check out Jasper. I found out that Smithers has shot him, but he shot him in his wooden leg, which I guess we find out that Jasper has a wooden leg.
It's true, and it's made a real spruce.
I mean, wouldn't that still be a crime?
I believe so. It's still assault, technically.
Yeah, I mean, just because he shot, he didn't know he had a wooden leg.
Right, it was still a shooting to kill.
Assault with a deadly weapon?
Yes. So yeah. lots, he would go to jail for a very long time, let's put it that way.
Jasper apparently doesn't even know that he's been wounded. And Wiggum has a final question for him.
I only hope you can forgive me for shooting your wooden leg.
You shot who and what now?
Okay, Smithers, you're free to go. And you, one question. Do you know who shot Mr. Burns? Because we are really up the creek on this one.
Wiggum in this episode in particular is great. He's
It's true because he has no idea what's going on and he's not afraid to tell everyone that.
No, exactly. He is so clueless and he is a good, like, he's a great perspective for us as an audience because we actually know more than he does in general. And so when he finds, like, him slowly figuring stuff out, it's constantly funny. Like, every single moment where him trying to interview people and he has no idea what's going on. But that is how Act 1 ends. We go to commercial.
And when we come back, we have to ask ourselves, who could be as bloodthirsty as Waylon Smithers?
I don't know. It could be anybody. When I think bloodthirsty and Simpsons characters, Smithers, immediately.
Oh, absolutely. He's the one. You're like, man, that guy, he's super shady.
Yeah, dangerous.
But this is, of course, Kent Brockman talking about Waylon Smithers. And we see the Simpsons watching it, and their commentary is revealing.
I guess it's never the most likely suspect.
Actually, Mom, in 95% of cases, it is.
The rest of the time, it's usually some deranged lunatic who did it for no reason.
Hey, I had a damn good reason. He could never remember my name.
See? So everyone had a reason, especially Homer, because he's totally not a deranged lunatic.
Well, I mean, no, of course not.
No, no, not at all. But anyway, Grandpa also jumps in to comment that you never know what you're capable of. And apparently he shot down a German plane last year. They just move right past that. When you first see it, you're like, oh, Grandpa, he shot down a plane in the war. And then you realize, oh, last year, huh? Oh, well.
He has. All right. Grandpa has a lot of good lines in this episode. Very secret.
He really does. I wish he was around more. Like, I want for an entire season for him to live with the Simpsons, to be honest, and just be around more often.
He doesn't need to live with them. He can just be. He doesn't need a reason to be around. He doesn't need a reason to be in the kitchen.
That's true. Anyway, we then see Lisa, who thinks that maybe she could help out. Apparently, Nancy Drew states that all you need is an inquisitive temperament.
Nancy Drew says that all you need to solve a mystery is an inquisitive temperament and two good friends. And I've got an inquisitive temperament. Maybe I could help solve this.
I think you're a little young to be investigating an attempted murder. Why don't you try to solve the mystery of who put that mud in the freezer?
Who wants chocolate ice cream?
Me!
Poor Lisa. She has this temperament, but no friends.
The mud. Who wants chocolate ice cream? That's such a simple thing, but it's so funny.
It's true, and it very much depends on the type of mud, because as I've learned in the most recent weeks, there are lots of different types and colors of muds, and some of them look nothing like chocolate ice cream. They do kind of look like lavender ice cream, but not so much chocolate.
Matt, moving on from your mud.
Lisa goes to help the police because they are, in a word, stupid. They have no idea what the heck's going on, and... I love that Wiggum is essentially, what's the book called? Agatha Christie.
Oh, 10. Oh. It's 10, 10, 10, 10 something. I need to know this now. 10 some tales. 10 something tales. It's
10 trite tales. That's what it does.
You sure?
Yes. Like 95% sure. 10 trite tales. I don't think it's a real thing. I think it's just.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if it was a real book or not. Cause like, I know there's a. What is it? Who's 10 Little Indians? Which one is that? Is that Agatha Christie?
I have no idea.
Wasn't it 10 Little Indians? That's like a famous mystery. 10 Little Indians. Sure? It's auto googling is. Yeah, it's Agatha. There's an Agatha Christie book called 10 Little Indians. Okay, I was right. All right. That's all I want to know.
Fair enough. So 10 Trite Tales help Wiggum out.
Well, no, Agatha Christie's book was called And Then There Were None. The name of the movie is 10 Little Indians. They made off the book. Although this says cool. The second film version of detective novel of the same name. I don't know. I haven't read enough Agatha Christie, I think, is the answer.
That is a very good answer. But we see that Police Chief Wiggum is attempting to learn how to solve mysteries from Agatha Christie, and he has to determine the mow-tie. And
it's a good thing to have.
Yeah, right? Everyone needs a motive. Lisa basically charts out all the suspects and how Mr. Burns wronged them. I believe the chart contains, let's see, what was it? Mo, Barney, Principal Skinner, Willie, and I think somebody else.
I thought it was just the four.
It's not important. Maybe it was just the four.
I think it was just the four. But then they ask about Tito Puente.
Then they ask about Tito Puente. And Lisa, of course, who arranged for Tito to get the job, says, well, I suppose he could be a suspect, but I couldn't see him doing that. He's in show business. And that is basically enough for them to immediately go over to Tito's, I guess, jazz club in Springfield.
French, of course. But why wound his body with bullets when I could set his soul afire with a slanderous mumble? Listen, if you will, to my revenge. Uno, dos, tres.
Wounds won't last long, but an insulting song Burns will always carry with him. So I'll settle my score on the salsa floor with this vengeful Latin rhythm. All of us despise you, please die.
okay, I believe you're innocent. Gee, I hope all those suspects are as much fun.
So, let that be a lesson to you. If you commit a crime in Springfield, just go out and have a catchy tune that you can play for the police when they show up, because they will immediately confirm that you're innocent.
That song is amazing. It's really catchy. Matt can testify. I was humming and singing it as we were getting ready to record.
Absolutely was, yes.
It's really, really catchy and, like, works really well. And actually, that is one of Tito Puente's band members singing. So, that is an authentic performance from them.
And it's fantastic. And really, there are so many great bits in this episode. And I think that one is really close to the top for me. Because, I mean, it's a song basically composed for this episode. And that makes it great. Unfortunately for the Springfield police, their next interview was Principal Skinner, who is...
Oh, it's so good, Matt. Oh, it's so good. It's so funny. It made me laugh. Him just being just slow. And Wiggum's reaction.
I believe.
Wiggum's reaction is even better because he's like, ugh! Come on. Like, he himself is exasperated. It's so good.
Well, that's because Wiggum is big on action, and Principal Skinner is extremely slow at basically telling exactly what happened and revelating the details, which we find out he was going to ambush Mr. Burns, but actually took his mother's makeup. So when he puts it on, he doesn't notice until it's already on somehow. Not quite sure how, but apparently he was interrupted in the bathroom by Superintendent Chalmers. And so Superintendent Chalmers can verify his whereabouts, but everything else he tells you is a filthy lie. Guess. Oh, I'm sorry. Just the fact that he didn't pick up on the makeup was the wrong makeup until it was already on him. It's like, you put mascara on, you knew what you were doing.
Maybe he goes by instinct, you know, and only goes to the mirror last when he's put on makeup.
Maybe.
It's been a while since he's had to put on a camouflage, Matt. Come on.
That's true. It's been 20, 30 years. We then move on to the best interviews in The Simpsons of all times. And
I'm telling you, I could ne'er have shut Burns.
This is your last warning about that.
It's impossible for me to fire a pistol. If you'll check my medical records, you'll see I have a crippling arthritis in my index fingers. Look at them! I got it from Space Invaders in 1977.
Oh, yeah, that was a pretty addictive video game.
Video game? Did you hold a grudge against Montgomery Burns?
No. All right, maybe I did, but I didn't shoot him.
Checks out. Okay, sir, you're free to go.
Good, because I got a hot date tonight. A date. Dinner with friends. Dinner alone. Watching TV alone. All right. I'm going to sit at home and ogle the ladies in the Victoria's Secret catalog. Sears catalog. Now, would you unhook this already, please? I don't deserve this kind of shabby treatment.
I'm pretty sure when most people think of The Simpsons, that moment with Mo is probably in their top five moments of all time.
I don't know about... I don't know, man. I do appreciate it. It's probably one... It certainly is my second favorite thing involving Mo.
Really? What would be your first?
His moment in Hurricane Nettie. I think we've even gone over this in our favorite Mo moments.
That's true. We sure did.
Yeah. But they are very similar in the fact that, like, it is just him being called out for being a pathetic person. But
who couldn't have shot Burns.
My only caveat about the best interviews, Homer in Cape Fear.
Oh, you're right. Oh, how could I forget that?
Have to go above it. I'm going to step on your foot. Thompson.
I think he's talking to you.
Yeah. But this is really great. And we get the Willies, his, Basic Instinct moment with him uncrossing his legs. And him not knowing that Space Invaders is a video game.
That's true, because he was actually shooting a real Space Invaders in 1977.
What's that movie? The Last Starfighter.
Of course, yes.
Ships
look exactly like they do.
Willie got recruited to become a starfighter in an alien.
That's true. They gave up him and came back for the kid when they learned that Willie is terrible at shooting.
Well, he had arthritis.
His fingers died out.
Yeah, he's had arthritis in his fingers. He couldn't do it anymore. It is also this is also there are many references to it in this episode, but another reference to, I believe, the O.J. Simpson trial. And O.J. was talking about arthritis in his knees, So, and Willie bring up the arthritis in his fingers.
Once we are finished with Willie and Mo, we move back to the Simpsons house where Marge has found out Grandpa's old cigar box with his gun in it, dug up, and the gun is missing. And of course, she is a little scared, but Grandpa is dismissive, of course. And as soon as she leaves the room, we see that Grandpa pulls out his old gun and tells the gun that he loves it, which, of course, Marge hears and then assumes that Grandpa is talking to her, and she shudders at the thought when he confirms it, because, yes, it's really disgusting. But then we move on to one of the best parts of the episode when Police Chief Wiggum claims it's going to be an all-night brainbuster. So they're working on this case for more than a day, which is unusual for them. And since they're out of coffee, he drinks warm cream and has a very interesting dream.
Still not close. Boy, this is going to be an all-night brainbuster. Better drink some coffee. We're out of coffee. Well, I'll just drink this warm cream.
Chief Wiggum, he'll eat the goose. This here's burns better. Look.
Huh?
Better. Look. Burns huge.
I'm not following you.
Burns is huge. Burns is huge.
Huh?
Look at Burns' suit. Yeesh.
So, I don't know why he then calls it a backwards talking dream when Eddie comes up to him, and Eddie, of course, thinks he's crazy.
Well, they don't. Have you seen Twin Peaks, Matt?
I have not.
You should watch Twin Peaks. It's
eh.
What do you mean, eh?
I've heard about it. It doesn't seem very interesting.
Just give me a moment. I'm trying to deal with this. You should watch Twin Peaks, Matt. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's a good show. It's very weird. It's very good. But this is a direct reference to Twin Peaks. Because in Twin Peaks, there is also a detective trying to solve a murder. And he has a dream. And when they're talking about backwards talking, it's easier to see it the strangeness in it when it's live action as opposed to animated. But basically, like, you can tell that Yeardley Smith's voice sounds strange, right?
Right.
It's harder to tell what they're trying to do in the animation because it doesn't look as odd. When they do it in Twin Peaks with an actual person, basically what they do is record her talking backwards. So, like, they have her lines for this bit, right? So she would read them backwards. They would record her reading them backwards. But then they would play them forwards. They would reverse them again.
Oh, okay.
So it would make it, obviously, it basically sounds like normal speech. Like, you can recognize the words and everything. But because the emphasis on the syllables is so strange and it makes it sound weird, which you hear, until the end when Lisa breaks because Wiggum is too stupid to understand what she's telling him. But in Twin Peaks, when it's live action, because it is a real person doing it and performing, and you see his actual mouth moving stranger than it would be just hearing it, that's why it makes it stand out. And the backwards talking dream, that is what he's referring to. You should watch Twin Peaks.
Maybe someday. Maybe.
It's like 30 episodes. It's not even that big it's on Netflix.
Maybe. I'll add to the list of things I have to watch. It's a very long list.
Matt, come on. You gotta,
I have a lot of TV to watch.
It's okay. Sorry. Okay. What happens after he wakes up from the dream, Matt?
After he wakes up, Eddie comes in and Wiggum, once again tells Eddie what he has seen, and Eddie says that maybe he should drive. So they go to look at Mr. Burns' suit and they find an eyelash. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
Of course, they get the eyelash. They take it to a, I guess you'd call him a forensic technician, and say, oh, you know, we'll get back to you in 8 to 10 weeks, unless you bribe him with a carton of cigarettes, in which case it takes a few seconds, like 10 to 15 seconds to get DNA results. That's totally how it works in the real world. Even now, it only takes 10 to 15 seconds. Probably faster by now, right?
I have no idea.
For anyone who doesn't know that I'm joking, it takes a very long time because you have to cultivate the DNA and then use a matching terms. And there are machines that do that now, but it still takes considerably longer than a few seconds. Also, luckily for Springfield, they have everyone's DNA on file because they get them from pennies.
That's my favorite thing about this. It's not the who care. I mean, obviously science is completely wrong and the bribing and stuff. It's the fact that they have everyone's DNA on file just from the pennies. It's so shady. I would believe it from Springfield.
That's true. That's why you should never use cash, guys. Never use cash. But
it was a little harder to do in 1995. Not use cash.
That's true. Moving along, we find that the DNA is the Simpsons. Dun, dun, dun. So, of course, the police immediately head to the Simpson household and arrest Homer because essentially he's the only adult they can arrest. So if it was, you know, Bart, Lisa, or Maggie, they're not going to arrest them because kids would never do that. They'd never shoot somebody, ever. But it turns out that there's a gun underneath Homer's car seat with his fingerprints on it, and the bullet matches the one they pulled out of Burns. So, yeah, that's some pretty good evidence right there. So, of course, Homer says doe, and Wiggum remarks that that's what they all say. They all say doe, and we fade to black.
I mean, again, more O.J. Simpson reference here. Yeah. The Simpson DNA. The evidence here is pretty strong against Homer. Like,
yeah, that's the kind of thing. Like, I literally, unless Mr. Burns tells you no, he's not the one who shot me, that is more than enough to put him away.
I know, like, he was assaulting him prior. There's a gun with his fingerprints on it, the same gun that shot Mr. Burns.
Yeah, Homer's going to jail.
Yeah, like it yeah. When we come back from commercial, Homer is being transported in the police wagon to the police station, you would assume. But of course, they have to make a stop at Krusty Burger. Chief Wiggum needs to get his pancake bites.
Bite-sized breakfast pancake balls.
Oh, okay.
Extra dipping sauce.
I mean, obviously.
It's like the ones that Denny's has.
Denny's has those?
Yes. Pancake puppies, I believe they're called.
Okay. Because the truck won't fit, the wagon won't fit underneath the roof of the drive-thru, they end up being this strange, you know, riding up on the curb with Wiggum trying to lean over long enough to get to the drive-thru window, ends up tipping over the police wagon. I would say that's impossible, but Wiggum is a very, very large man.
That's true, especially if it was. I mean, they're already up at it's quite a steep angle. It actually doesn't take that much to knock a tall vehicle like that over.
That's
so
true.
I can see that happening.
Yeah.
Although I would think he would really be crushed underneath that. Like, he's not getting away with, you know, an arm in a sling. He's probably got a broken back from that.
No, he's fine. He's fine. Just his arm has hurt a little bit. But we see Jasper again. And Homer is I believe the back of the wagon is broken open, and Homer crawls out of there. And then Jasper is about to run him over. Jasper, I wouldn't suggest ramming vehicles out of the way at the drive-thru.
Well, he's got a really old school car, so it's built tough, you know.
Okay. But we get a reference to The Fugitive. Which, when did The Fugitive come out?
It would be fairly recent when this.
Was early mid '90s, right? I've only seen it 1,000 times. 93, so that's 2 years old at the time, which is about right. That seems appropriate. So Homer has escaped. Burns wakes up. Can only say Homer's name, which again. I mean, no, Homer, when did he wake up? He was awake already, right? He had woken when Burns woke up when they were in his room looking at his suit, and he said Homer Simpson.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. That seems to be the only thing you can say.
Yeah, that's the only thing
you can
say.
When you were in that coma, did you feel your brain getting damaged?
Yes, and we have a little moment with Dr. Nick.
Hi, everybody.
Ho, Mr. Simpson.
Okay, that was a little strange. Tell me, how are you feeling today?
Homer Simpson.
That seems to be all you can say. When you were in that coma, did you feel your brain getting damaged?
There you go, Matt. That is Homer Simpson. Harry Shearer does it.
Homer Simpson.
Harry Shearer does a tremendous job as Burns in this episode. We find out that Marge took Homer's DNA. That's how that works, right, Matt?
Yep. When you get married, they do a little gene splicing on you, and now you have DNA.
You're the same. You get married, you get everything, including the DNA.
Exactly.
I really like how Lisa in this episode twice is just doesn't argue with Marge when she's wrong.
So anyway, Mom.
Yeah, she's like, okay. Lisa is trying to poke holes in this evidence. She's trying to find like some loopholes in there that would make Homer a free man. And she, you know, she brings up a situation where he could have accidentally touched the gun without actually firing it when he is driving with his knees while holding two ice cream cones.
Like you do.
Like you do. I mean, ice cream's good. Smithers, this isn't legal, is it, Matt? To offer...
Not at all.
You can't offer rewards dead or alive for people. That's putting a hit out on someone, basically.
Essentially, yes.
You can't... Yeah, that's not... But I guess in Springfield, it's, you know, it's only the laws you enforce. But he puts out a dead or alive reward, $50,000 for Homer Simpson, which isn't that much, honestly.
It was more back then.
But this man is supposedly an attempted murderer. You know, escaped from prison. You escaped from custody. You probably, I mean, to go after him. It's pretty dangerous. That's why. But Lisa goes back to the scene of the crime to try and find something that would prove her father's innocence. You know, she wants Homer. She doesn't. I think the real thing is she doesn't see a Homer as capable of murder or attempted murder.
Right.
I think she sees her father as innocent and knows there has to be something out there. There has to be some sort of physical evidence to show that he is innocent. She goes to the scene of the crime, and there's a pigeon there that is apparently a sentient pigeon.
That's true. He's yelling clue, clue to anyone who will tell.
She doesn't specify I think she says that. Does she actually say anything? We only see things, right? Or does she actually?
Right. She does not say anything.
Yeah, we only see that Burns' gun holster is empty when he fell onto the sundial, and we see the letters his hands were pointing at from his perspective, which we had not seen before. You know, from his point of view. Lisa has a kind of a eureka moment there and rushes to the hospital, as the whole of Springfield does too, I guess, to get that $50,000. Homer has escaped, has gone straight to the hospital to confront Mr. Burns, wondering why Mr. Burns has not knowing his name and now is basically pointing the finger at him, telling that he's the murderer, even though he wasn't. So Lisa stops the mob. The mob is rushing through the hospital to Apu makes the point that they only need 51% of the carcass to get the money. So I assume they're going to brutally murder Homer. Lisa stops the mob, saying he wouldn't hurt a fly. Wiggum opens the hospital room door, and he is shaking Mr. Burns around the neck. Not really strangling him, but shaking him.
Yeah.
But this, I guess, somehow jars Mr. Burns' personality back, and he's able to speak again.
Stop telling him it was me! I'll kill you for saying it was me!
What? Who is the meaning of this? It is Smithers! Who is this beast that's shaking me?
No! Say it, Burns! Say I never shot you!
Before.
Shot? By you, I'm afraid not, my primitive friend. Your kind has neither the cranial capacity nor the opposable digits to operate a firearm. The one who shot me was... Maggie Simpson.
So we learn that Maggie was the one who shot Mr. Burns.
Dun dun dun
dun dun. And Burns explains what happens. What happened the night of the shooting.
With the sunblocker in place and the town aghast, I was on top of the world. So I wanted to kick up my heels and indulge my sweet tooth. I feel like celebrating. Oh, it's you. What are you so happy about? I see. Yes. That's the one. Smithers had thwarted my earlier attempt to take candy from a baby, but with him out of the picture, I was free to wallow in my own crapulence. I think you'd better drop it. But the old axiom was misleading.
Taking the candy proved exceedingly difficult.
I said drop it.
Stricken, I lurched forth in search of aid, but finding only slack-jawed gawkers, I gave up and collapsed on the sundial.
So, and Lisa tries to interject that he had pointed to M&S, spell out Maggie Simpson, but Burns apparently just accidentally pointed at those letters?
Yes, it was totally an accident. He didn't do it at all. He was actually sucking out his gold fillings. Well, he says, no, my last action was to suck out my gold fillings because paramedics have sticky fingers. Maybe it was his second to last action.
They don't specify, but you would think that'd be the end of it, but Mr. Burns wants to prosecute Maggie.
Well, I'm just relieved that Homer's safe and that you've recovered and we can all get back to normal. If Maggie could talk, I'm sure she'd apologize for shooting you.
I'm afraid that's insufficient. Officer, arrest the baby.
Yeah, right, Pops. No jury in the world's gonna convict a baby. Maybe Texas.
Besides, she didn't mean it. It was an accident.
And that's how the episode ends, with foreboding Maggie.
And nothing bad ever came from Maggie ever again.
No, never. Except those other times.
She shot somebody.
Yeah, or dropped a rock on someone's head.
Yeah.
All those times. But, I mean, do you remember how you felt the first time you saw this episode, Matt?
I actually saw this episode for the first time when in syndication. So it was a while after it actually happened. I thought it was great. I think I may have actually seen the second episode of part two before I saw part one. But I thought it was hilarious. And because there wasn't that huge gap for me, it wasn't a big deal. There was no catharsis over who did it. So I didn't get mad over the nonsensical answer of who actually shot Mr. Burns.
I don't really remember. I distinctly remember watching the first part. I knew I watched this the night it aired too, because I know I was very excited about it. But I don't really remember distinctly. Like I feel like I was just like, oh, okay. Like it's a Simpsons, it makes sense. It would be Maggie. Like that would
yeah.
I think it, looking back, you know, have developed more about this kind of this dark side of Maggie that's just hanging out, you know, that we see occasionally, that is more of a product after this episode in particular. But free of all the hype and all that, it's still a very good episode.
It is, even without the whole mystery aspect of it, of the, you know, having to wait so long to find out who actually did it, without the whodunit quality, it's still a really good episode. There's so many great gags that are extremely memorable from this.
Yeah, it's really, really funny. The few instances that it uses, you know, the references to Fugitive and to Twin Peaks and to, you know, Basic Instinct, they're all really strong. They're used really well. Mm-hmm. A lot of good character. You know, there's a lot of good, like, much like part one, there's a lot of good Springfield in it. We'll see where we rank it in the show.
Ooh.
Yeah. We can move on to our next segment. It's not time for my favorite episode. We have a submission, Matthew. This is from...
We do.
This is from Andrew. Believe it or not, this was the second episode of The Simpsons I had ever seen, the first part being part one, Who Shot Mr. Burns, part one. And while I admit, may have been a little young for it at five, I would watch the tape recorded of both parts over and over again. These episodes cemented my love of the show, and to this day, whenever Marge asks Lisa to solve the mystery of who put the mud in the freezer, I still laugh like I did all those years ago. Thank you, Andrew, for your submission. If you have a particular episode that is your favorite, just send me an email at simpsonsshowpod@gmail.com explaining why. I'll read it on air when we get to that episode. Next up, Matt, it is time for comments from the news group.
Okay, here we are. alt.nerd.obsessive.
Comments from the news group is where I will comb through the old alt.tv.simpsons news group. This is archived on Google Groups. You can search it for yourself there if you'd like. Still kind of frustrated the fact that seemingly hundreds and hundreds of discussion posts about this have vanished. They're not there. I can tell you on the Simpsons archive, they have middling to good reviews. Some people were a little disappointed in the result. Some people really liked it. But, you know, most people recognize at least the underlying quality, even if the result of the murder mystery was not to their liking.
Well, those people are wrong.
It doesn't surprise me. I much like the chalkboard gag kind of hints at, I don't think there's anybody they could have chosen that would have been, it's months of hype. There's months of hype. There was a phone contest. You know, whoever dialed 1-800-COLLECT could try and guess the murderer.
Uh-huh.
And no one got it. No one got it. The person who won the contest was then drawn randomly, because the winner would get to be animated in the show. They were drawn randomly. They weren't a fan of the show, so they just chose a cash prize. So not much came out of that. However, guest Andrew Bloom. I lost it. I just had it. Dang it, Matt.
Hmm.
Why, help me. Help me be less organized. Be more organized, not less.
I especially can't do that now that you're gone in Canada.
Oh, that's true. Oh, I'm sorry, I found it. Yes, from a frequent guest, Andrew Bloom. He actually did a little some digging of it on his own and found a post on animation news group that had discussed it a little bit. Most people, there was a long post someone had copy pasted from the Simpsons news group about all the different suspects and who, like, and Maggie was on the list. Most people did not actually suspect that it was her. There is, of the available news groups, there's a dude on the Fish news group, the band, PHISH, Fish.
What?
Yeah, and there was a post on the Fish news group about the Simpsons and who shot Mr. Burns, and they correctly guessed Maggie Simpson. And
that's actually somebody from the future came back.
It's a serious guess. I don't like it's in the and it's dated in June of the summer. So obviously it was before the episode aired. Most and there's some people who from what I've seen there's some people who had guessed Maggie, but it seemed like they were joking. Like it wasn't like seriously. No, I think Maggie did it. It's mostly like haha, he's probably the kid. It might have been the baby. That would be funny. But I don't think they were seriously thought it was Maggie. This person seems to actually predict it.
Like on the money, he even gives reasons, it looks like.
Yep. It bears out to be true.
Yeah.
But that's about it for this week for the news group. I it's empty for the next month or two. I really hope it comes back. I like looking through all that old stuff, even if the people are really negative. But we can move on to our next segment. It's time for the listener question of the week.
Let's try one more number.
Yellow?
KBBL is going to give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Yellow?
Our listener question of the week this week is, who did you guys out there first think shot Mr. Burns when you had first seen this episode? I really appreciate all your answers, because this is not one of our typical kind of questions. This is more of a personal kind of thing and remembering and all that. I appreciate all the honesty, all the good answers. First from Abby. I thought Grandpa did it, mostly because the only clue I noticed was a screamingly obvious empty cigar box at the end of the episode. Then I thought, well, Marge was the one who buried the gun, so maybe it was her. But then I decided that was out of character and went back to Grandpa. Now I'm like, what kind of 13-year-old girl thinks about this kind of stuff? Answer, an awesome one. Boom. we have Jeff. I remember using my detective skills as a 10-year-old to determine that Tito Puente must have done it. He was a non-regular character, and I already thought we weren't going to have Mr. Burns anymore. So it didn't make sense to get rid of two regulars. After all, the Simpsons already showed us how they introduce quote-unquote real criminals. Malloy the Cat Burglar was a one-time character, too. Not bad logic for a 10-year-old, eh? Zach's answer, Grandpa. Thought they were going to write him off the show, and this was the start of something where Grandpa died before his trial or goes to prison. Would have been a real dark turn for the show, but I figured that they would want to shake it up after that many seasons. 21 seasons later, and I look quite foolish. Well, time makes fools of us all.
A lot of seasons later.
Yeah. Dave's answer, I remember being on the schoolyard 100% positive the dog did it. That's all. He was another culprit. Dom Smithers. I was 5 years old when I saw the premiere of this episode, and I thought I was genius when I saw Burns pointing to the WS. Little did I know. We have Al at Mason for Gov. Mason for Gov? I guess that's it. Marge did it. They found that Simpsons DNA on the gun, and when she married Homer, she took his name and everything. It's very true, of course. Obviously, that's how science works. Alvaro at The Other Alvaro. I thought it was Smithers 100%. Made the most sense character-wise. Cody at Commander Cody 83. Skinner, Chalmers, or Willie? Because they seem to be the ones who stood to lose the most from the slant drilling. Ryan at EID9. Smithers. For that to be true, you'd have to ignore all the Simpsons DNA evidence, and that would be downright nutty. Brian at Brinophile. My best guess, Smithers. Since that was a left turn from his sycophantic nature, I expect to be completely surprised, though, and I was. Finally, we have Sean at Johnny Mac 15. I watched this with my whole family when it came out. I thought it was Smithers. My dad, quote, watch it be the baby or some bleep. We don't. PG podcast. Matt, what was your, do you have an answer you remember?
Unfortunately, like I said, I did not actually watch this episode live when I was young, so I don't really have an answer, but I probably would have thought it was Smithers. I mean, that's really who they were pointing to.
Yeah, that was my guess. My guess when I was a 10-year-old boy was Smithers. I mean, I'm not sure if I picked up on the WS thing, but it seemed very much like the natural way to go. Like, yes, have Smithers do it. And then that just be like, and then Burns forgive him immediately and Smithers is rehired. Like that seemed like, in my mind, I think at 10, I'm like, yeah, that'll be what they do. It'd be funny. And Burns, like, the funny thing is that Burns just immediately forgives him and he hires him back.
No, well, yes.
I think
there was a 5% pay cut involved.
Yeah, something like, yeah, exactly. That is, yes, for trying to kill me. But that's what I assume that would happen. But I was obviously wrong. I think I was quite surprised. So that was Maggie, but I didn't think I was upset. Our next week's question, another little weird one. If they had another two-part murder mystery, who would be your victim and culprit if you were in charge? I'm actually going to think
preferably
about
it. A normal Springfield person, but if you want those celebrities in there too, why not?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, within reason, but you guys generally are pretty smart about all this because you're Simpsons fans. You Porsche are smart. I'll post this question on all our social media, facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod, Twitter @SimpsonsShowPod. Email us at SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. Any of those places, reach out to us, follow us, like us, subscribe, other social media words. Matt, it's a fresh season, fresh start.
Dun, dun, dun.
It is time, once again, for the No Google Trivia Challenge.
I am too smart. I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-R-T.
The No Google Trivia Challenge is where Matt and I will each try and stump the other with three trivia questions. One easy, one medium, one hard. The last couple seasons, we've had wagers for who wins, who loses. I lost our last season's wager, season 6. Before I left the great state of Florida, we recorded me mowing Matt's lawn in my wife's Sunday best.
It was wonderful. I mean, I did have to go behind you and do and fix a lot, but you know, you did the most of it. You did a good job for a guy who doesn't have his own lawn.
First of all, I don't mow. I have had a landscaper for a long time. I've been renting and I was wearing a dress. I'm not used to moving around in a dress, you know, and it was hot.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Yeah. Florida heat. But we have video of it. I need to edit it now that I'm sort of settled in my new home. I would be working on it, hoping to get it up in the next week or so. Keep an eye out for it. We don't have a wager for this season yet, even though I have an idea and Matt is hesitant. But we will figure it out. We're gonna brainstorm. You guys are welcome to send us ideas. I don't want it to be another. I don't know. I have a feeling I'm just gonna lose every season. So we need a way that to make it. I can't. He's a machine. Matt, you're a machine. I don't know what to do. I can't.
Well,
you're like
a
Terminator. It's like I can't. What do you want me to do? I don't have a press. Like, we're not an industrial warehouse. I just can't push a button and squish you. It doesn't work. But we'll come up with something. You guys are welcome to send us ideas, suggestions. I will begin this week. Matt, are you ready for an easy question?
I'm ready.
I chose my own theme. You'll figure it out very quickly. Mm. First question. What was Maggie's first word?
Oh, well, there's been lots. I believe daddy, was the canonical first word.
That you are correct. I wanted the simplest, easiest one. Yes.
Fair enough. All right, are you ready for your easy question?
I am ready.
Technically, all of mine are pretty easy, and there's a theme, but you got it. In a Milhouse Divided, who gets divorced?
The Van Houtens.
Indeed, you are correct, sir.
Your medium question. In the newer episodes of the show, how much does Maggie cost in the new show intro?
Oh, I believe it's $874.36.
Sorry, Matt. That is incorrect. Aww. It is $486.52.
Wow, I was way off.
And you said a number.
That's true. I did. I was hoping to at least get the hundreds right, but I was only double.
They're both numbers. You got, mm-hmm. Is that not small solace?
I guess so.
What's my medium question?
All right. Your medium question. At his new apartment, what does Kirk sleep in?
A race car bed.
That is correct.
Your hard question, Matt. Who makes the noise of Maggie's pacifier? Who recorded it? Who made that noise?
Who recorded it?
The voice actor. Who would it be? I assume the one they use forever.
I'm going to say Hank Azaria because he does everything. Most of the animals.
You'd be incorrect, Matt.
Oh, who was it?
It is actually Matt Groening.
Really? Mm-hmm. Good to know. I had no idea.
I it is a fact I learned myself.
Hmm. All right, your hard question. What is the name of Kirk's demo tape towards the end of the episode of Milhouse Divided?
Can I Borrow a Feeling?
That is correct. Wow.
Those again.
It was easy, but it was that easy.
Those, I mean, Milhouse Divided is a pretty awesome episode.
It really is.
It's pretty good. And okay, well, now that I'm leading 6-1 after one episode, I can announce that our wager for this season is the loser has to get a Simpsons themed tattoo. Right, Matt?
Yeah, no, that's not happening.
Okay,
we'll come up with something else, but no tattoos.
Mm-hmm. But okay. I mean, I guess that it is a permanent. I mean, but it's a Simpsons related. You can choose what it is. I'm not even going to make it like nope. I get to choose. It could be anything nope. you want. Anything.
Nope. Nope.
Okay, fine. But you guys can you can send in themes or trivia questions to any of the aforementioned social media places or our email, and I'll try and use them on the show. Next up, Matt. I'll catch my breath a little bit. We can move on to our final segment. The segment we end every single episode with. It is time for Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever is part of the show where, Matt, I will rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. Not as good as part one.
Yeah, I would agree. I feel like one of the things that really brought this down, and it's sad, but it was a necessity back in those days, was the flashbacks. They took a decent chunk of the episode just to show us things we had just recently seen. So
yeah.
I think that definitely puts it not as high as one, but this one does have a lot of great gags.
Yeah, it does. It's still very funny. Has a lot of great character stuff. There's still like good action, even with Homer's little escape from
and all the fugitive references.
Yeah, from that. I don't know where to put it. It's a. Where would you start?
I'm looking somewhere around number 20. Right around the Deep Space Homer, Mr. Plow kind of area. I feel like Rosebud is a good comparison, just because it's a Burns-centered episode that doesn't have a lot of Mr. Burns in it, but it's centered around something that he wants. So I feel like this is better than that, but not a lot better.
Not that you say that. I'm looking at all those episodes in that area. I would probably put it at 21.
21.
Right below Homer the Heretic. Right above Homer the Great.
Above Homer the Great. Wow. Above the Stonecutters, huh?
I would put it above. You just wanted to put it above Rosebud. I don't even hear it. You're four, which is also above Homer the Great. Just because it's four above Homer the Great doesn't make it any.
I feel like Rosebud is a little higher than it should have been, but then we're not going to go rehash that.
No. I think Rosebud is it's a fine place for a Rosebud. Rosebud's a good episode.
All right.
I feel like you're right. I think the flashbacks hamper the episode a little bit. And I think that's really the main reason. I think the flashbacks hamper it because it's a part two, because there's so much hype about who's the actual perpetrator. There's a lot of extra stuff tied into the episode, which it's not the episode's fault, but I feel like it must be weighed.
That's true. I also feel like this episode felt a little rushed, which helped with a quick pacing that felt somewhat suspenseful, but more like an action movie kind of thing where everything is real quick to happen. Even the contemplative moments are very, very short. I feel like this would be a good, oddly enough, a two-parter. They should have turned this into three parts, and it should be a two-parter an hour long to open the seventh season.
And
you could have let a lot of those bits breathe a little more.
I'm like looking at, I don't know. I think that Deep Space Homer and Homer the Heretic have a lot of great Homer character stuff, while Homer the Great doesn't have that kind of stuff in it. It is more of a madcap kind of, has a great song, but this episode also has a great song in it. I don't know. That's my gut. Like, I don't really have, like, that's what, I'm looking at it, and I would go right at that point. I love Homer the Heretic. I think Homer the Great, you like it more than I do. I would put this right in between them.
Yeah, I mean, I like Homer the Great, but I definitely see its faults. It's a great Homer episode. The song really elevates it. And I think when I first saw Homer the Great, I was big into conspiracy theories. I have since grown out of that, as I hope all people do. But it's even funnier now because of that. But yeah, I definitely think this episode is probably better than Homer the Great.
Is it, but 21, is that acceptable to you?
Yeah. I'm not really wedded to it being better than like Mr. Plow or Deep Space Homer. I still feel like Rosebud's too high, but yeah, I definitely think Homer the Heretic is a better episode than this is.
Okay. So new number 21 is Who Shot Mr. Burns Part 2. Still number one on our list is Cape Fear, although, whew, season 7. Oh man,
it's a murderer's row of good episodes.
We've said that multiple times before, and I mean, obviously, like, the run of the classic years of The Simpsons is almost unparalleled. But season 7, season 8 are like my seasons. You know, like they feel like home to me. I think it's because I was getting right to the right age where I could start understanding it, like the deeper stuff that they were doing, the more of the references and more of like the symbolism and all that. And I don't know. It hits the perfect blend of nostalgia, weirdness, and experimentation that there's going to be competition at the top in the next couple seasons. Guarantee it.
Oh, yeah.
What? Okay. Well, first of all, you can find this list at our website. It is thesimpsonsshow.com. Links to this list, links to new episodes, downloadable streaming, to our Facebook, to our Twitter, to our RSS feed, link to our Patreon if you want to throw us a couple dollars. Really appreciate it. Really helps us out. Show remains ad-free because of it. Matt, what is our next episode?
Are you ready? Can you handle the Radioactive Man?
I think it's just Radioactive Man.
Okay, fine. Yeah, but still.
Great episode. Goggles say to nothing.
Nothing.
Yes. That again, this is a tremendous, tremendous episode. I'm really excited to watch it and talk about it. See, before we go, you can find me on Twitter at Mixmaster Cereal. That's MixmasterCereal. I also do a comic book podcast called Handsome Boys Comics Hour. If you are a comic book fan, do encourage you to check that out. It's on iTunes, podcast places, you know. Matt does not participate in social media unless you're a certain level of Patreon backer. You will not find him.
That's true. And I will be working so much outdoors in the next couple of weeks that I will be in a fever blistered haze. So if you see somebody who is basically wandering around sunburned beyond all recognition, just throw some water on me. That will communicate everything I need to know.
I don't know, Matt. You were looking. You didn't look burnt. You just kind of look tan. You looked handsome last time I saw
you. That's because I spent most of the time watching other people work. My part of the project is coming up, so then I'll have to actually be in the sun working.
Oh. You're done with the supervising part?
Yeah, unfortunately.
I'm Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching those episodes.
Shh.